Welcome to this deep dive into thinking and acting locally.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, we're going to be exploring some writings by Tom Woods today.
Okay.
Specifically, those free ebooks he has at tomsfreebooks.com.
I love it.
And just a heads up.
Yeah.
If you believe that the American establishment has your best interests at heart, these books are definitely not for you.
They're not for you.
So, these are for folks who are ready to challenge some conventional wisdom and explore alternatives.
Yeah, and what I think is so interesting about these sources is that they don't just criticize popular policies, they actually offer alternative historical and economic interpretations, which is really cool.
I like that. It's like putting on a different set of glasses.
Exactly, looking at these familiar issues, but through a totally new lens.
Yeah.
Which I always find refreshing.
And intriguing, too.
Absolutely.
And especially, I think, a lot of this is about challenging the role of government.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, considering different approaches. So we're going to jump right in with kind of an interesting concept.
Okay.
The myth of Nordic socialism.
Interesting.
So Scandinavia, a region that is often praised for its social policies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people think it's kind of like a utopia.
Right, right.
Are those policies truly socialist, though?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
And I think Tom Woods brings in Nima Sanandaji, who's an economist who grew up in Sweden.
Okay.
And his perspective is really interesting because he's like, even the Nordic countries themselves, they don't even consider their model socialist.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
That is very fascinating. So where does this misconception come from?
Well, Sanandaji, he argues that it's partly due to a misunderstanding of the Nordic model's history.
Okay.
He points out that a lot of those positive aspects of Nordic societies, things like high levels of social trust, income equality, that stuff existed before the expansion of the welfare state.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, you know, these countries already had a really strong cultural foundation of hard work, individual responsibility.
So is he arguing then that it's not the government that's creating this? It's more of a cultural thing?
He's arguing that the culture contributes significantly to their success.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So it's not just about policies then.
No.
It's about the culture, the values.
Yeah, and the historical context.
Okay.
You know, where they were coming from.
Gotcha.
And he also emphasizes that while they've achieved some positive outcomes,
mm-hmm.
it's not a perfect system.
Okay.
You know, and he talks about things like hidden taxation.
Hidden taxation.
So high taxes are often embedded in the prices of goods and services.
Oh, so you don't even realize how much you're being taxed.
Right. They're obscuring that true burden from the citizens.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and some people even argue that that's kind of the direction the U.S. is going too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. With all these fees and everything.
Yeah. You know, it's not always up front and clear.
Right.
He also shares a personal anecdote that I think kind of adds another layer to this. He talks about his family. They immigrated to Sweden, initially benefited from that social safety net.
Yeah.
But he saw firsthand how easy it could be to become dependent on it.
Oh, yeah.
And then lose the motivation to actually work.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, you know. So it kind of shows you that even policies with good intentions can have these unintended consequences.
Right.
And there's always this trade-off, right, between safety net, but also fostering that responsibility.
That's a really good point.
So it's tempting to look at these models and be like, wow, they have it all figured out.
Right.
But you got to look beyond that and be like, okay, what are the cultural factors, the historical context, and the potential downsides?
Yeah, because there's always a trade-off.
Always, always.
Okay, so we've debunked Nordic socialism. Learn that cultural values, individual responsibility play a big role in the society's success.
Right.
So now let's dive into healthcare.
Okay.
Something that affects all of us.
Absolutely.
But what's the perspective we're looking at here? Because this is always a hot button issue.
It is. Tom Woods introduces us to Dr. Josh Umber.
Hmm?
He runs a direct pay practice called Atlas.MD. And this is where things get really, really interesting.
Okay.
He operates entirely outside the traditional insurance-based system.
Wait, no insurance?
No insurance.
How's that work?
I know. That's what everyone asks.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
He argues that insurance is meant for those catastrophic events.
Right.
Not routine care.
Yeah.
And he thinks that the involvement of insurance companies in every aspect of healthcare, that's what's led to these skyrocketing costs and this crazy bureaucracy.
That's a perspective you don't hear very often.
No.
But it does make sense. Like, we don't use car insurance to pay for an oil change.
Exactly. That's his point. Why are we doing it with healthcare?
Yeah, why are we?
And he argues that by cutting out that middleman and just negotiating cash prices, he can offer affordable, transparent healthcare.
Okay, but how much cheaper are we talking? Like, are we talking a little discount or like a substantial amount?
It's substantial. Like, he gives some real-world examples that will blow your mind.
Okay.
A blood test that would typically cost over $1,000.
Wow.
$39 at his practice.
That's a huge difference.
Right.
So it does sound like he's making healthcare truly affordable, accessible.
That's the goal. He describes it as Marcus Welby medicine with an iPhone.
I love that.
Right? So personalized, patient-centered, but using tech to streamline everything and keep costs down.
It's not just ditching insurance. It's rethinking the entire model.
Yeah, the whole delivery model. And he argues that the current system is so bloated and bureaucratic.
Yeah.
That doctors need all this staff just to deal with the paperwork, the billing.
It's crazy.
Right. That all adds to the cost.
It really does.
And it's amazing how this simple idea, cut out the middleman,
yeah,
could have such a huge impact.
Huge impact, yeah.
Yeah, and his approach raises questions about, you know, the role of government in healthcare.
Right.
You know, he believes Obamacare actually made things worse.
Oh, interesting.
Drove up costs and pushed people towards alternatives like his.
So he's not for a single-payer system.
Nope.
It's more of a market-based approach.
Yeah, empower patients and doctors to make choices.
That's a very different way of thinking about it.
It is, but it's worth considering.
It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially as these costs keep going up.
Yeah.
And access becomes more challenging.
Absolutely.
All right. So, moving on. The Green New Deal.
Okay.
That's been in the news a lot lately. And a lot of debate about it, obviously.
Yeah. Climate change is a huge concern.
So, what perspective are we looking at here?
Well, this is an interesting one.
Okay.
Tom Woods brings in Patrick Moore.
Patrick Moore.
Who was a co-founder of Greenpeace.
Wow, okay.
To criticize the Green New Deal.
That's not something you hear every day.
No, you don't.
So a founder of Greenpeace,
yeah,
is critiquing this major environmental policy.
And he doesn't hold back.
I bet.
He says it's not just impractical, it's dangerous.
Okay, strong words.
Strong words. He thinks it would lead to the collapse of agriculture.
Oh, wow.
And mass starvation.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So his reasoning behind that.
Yeah, what's his reasoning?
Is that the Green New Deal totally ignores the role of fossil fuels.
Okay.
In modern agriculture.
Right.
You know, fertilizer production,
mm-hmm,
powering farm equipment, transporting food.
Yeah.
All relies on fossil fuels.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So he's saying eliminate fossil fuels that rapidly you're disrupting the entire food supply.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Right. And he also criticizes the plan for rejecting nuclear and hydropower.
Okay.
Which he thinks are the most viable large-scale alternatives.
Right.
To fossil fuels for electricity generation.
Interesting. Okay. So it sounds like he's not necessarily against addressing climate change.
No, he's worried about the unintended consequences of the proposed solution.
Yeah, it's like with everything.
Right.
There's always that trade-off.
Always trade-offs. He compares relying solely on solar and wind power to, like, trying to build a modern city with just wood.
Oh, wow.
Right. So he says these energy sources are intermittent, they're not reliable, they're not scalable enough,
right,
to meet the demands of a modern society.
It's a really good analogy.
I thought so, too.
It makes you think about those trade-offs.
Yeah. You can't just, like, snap your fingers.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
He also brought up something that I thought was really interesting, this rewilding movement.
Yeah, that was it.
Have you heard of this?
Yeah, a little bit.
So they advocate for returning vast areas of land to their natural state.
Okay.
Essentially letting nature reclaim what was developed.
Okay.
So he's concerned about its potential influence on the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
And the implications for, you know, human progress.
So is he worried that this will lead to restrictions on land use and development? Yeah. He's worried about, you know, impacting food production, other essential activities.
Right. Okay. So it's all very interesting.
It is. And it's, you know, a different way of thinking about environmentalism.
Yeah.
It emphasizes human ingenuity.
Right.
And the role we play in shaping the planet.
Okay. So even though he's a controversial figure, his perspective does highlight the importance of considering those unintended consequences.
Absolutely.
And exploring a range of solutions.
Yep. Even those that challenge, you know, that conventional wisdom.
Right. Even when it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've debunked Nordic socialism, explored alternative approach to healthcare.
Yeah.
Taken a critical look at the Green New Deal. What's next on our Think and Act Locally agenda?
Well, let's talk about income inequality.
Okay.
You know, it's always in the headlines.
It is.
Sparks a lot of debate.
Lots of passion.
Yeah, very passionate issue.
So what perspective are we looking at here?
Tom Woods brings in Leon Liu, co-founder of the Free Market Foundation, to challenge the prevailing narrative about income inequality.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Oh, yeah. Challenging the status quo.
Challenging the conventional wisdom.
Yeah. He starts by saying that equating wealth with equality is a fallacy.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So what's he getting at there?
He says true equality, it's more than just money.
Right.
It's freedom, opportunity, well-being.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You can have lots of money and still be unhappy.
Absolutely. Or unfulfilled.
Right.
And you can have very little money and live a rich life.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So he's saying that focusing just on income differences,
yeah,
it misses the bigger picture of human progress.
Right.
And he argues that global living standards, even for the poorest people, have dramatically improved in recent decades.
Okay.
Thanks to free markets and technology.
So he's acknowledging that, yes, there might be income disparities.
Yeah.
But overall, quality of life has improved.
He says significantly.
Okay.
And he actually has a statistic that's really striking. Global poverty, based on that, you know, dollar a day measure, has plummeted from almost a third of humanity to less than 5%.
Wow.
In just a generation.
That is incredible.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing progress.
It is.
But what about those arguments you always hear, you know, from organizations like Oxfam?
Right.
They're always talking about the gap between rich and poor widening.
Right, yeah.
Well, he criticizes them for being what he calls obsessed with inequality.
Okay.
And says they often ignore the positive role of free markets in alleviating poverty.
Interesting.
So he thinks focusing on wealth redistribution,
okay,
instead of wealth creation is counterproductive.
So he's challenging that idea that income inequality is inherently a bad thing.
He is. He uses this analogy that I thought was really helpful.
Okay.
He talks about how technology has actually closed the gap in quality of life between rich and poor.
Okay.
So think about, you know, watching the World Cup final. In the past, only the wealthy could travel to the game, see it live.
Right.
But now the poorest people can watch it on TV.
Right.
You know, and the experience is fundamentally the same.
Yeah.
Even if the setting is different.
That is such a good analogy.
All right. So it shows you how technology can level the playing field.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great example.
And he extends that to things like transportation.
Yeah.
You know, only wealthy could afford cars, but now almost everyone has some form of motorized transportation.
Right. Yeah. Even if it's not a fancy car.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So even though there's income differences, it doesn't necessarily mean huge quality of life differences anymore.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But what about those CEO to janitor pay ratios?
Oh, yeah.
Those are hard to ignore.
They are, but he says those comparisons are misleading.
Okay.
They don't take into account the full picture of compensation.
Right.
You know, things like benefits, stock options.
Right.
The risk and responsibility involved in those roles.
Yeah. So focusing on the salary figures is kind of a distorted picture.
Yeah, it doesn't tell the whole story.
Of how much people are earning and how well they're living.
He says we need to look beyond those simple comparisons and consider the overall well-being of the poor, including things like healthcare, education.
Right.
And access to those essential services.
This is really making me rethink how I view this whole thing with income inequality.
I know. It's not as black and white as it's often presented.
It's not, no.
And that's one of the goals of this Think and Act Locally thing, is like challenge those narratives and encourage you to think critically about these complex issues.
It's good.
Yeah.
All right. We've tackled some biggies already. Nordic socialism, healthcare, Green New Deal, income inequality. What other sacred cows are we tipping over?
Higher education.
Okay.
College.
All right.
It's practically a rite of passage these days.
It is.
So what's the unconventional perspective? Well, Tom Woods brings in Brian Kaplan.
Okay.
He's an economist, and he wrote this book called The Case Against Education.
Okay.
And his views are
probably a little controversial.
Yeah, not going to win him any popularity contests.
No, not in academia. Probably not.
No.
Okay.
He believes that the education system, particularly higher education, is largely a waste of time and money.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bold statement.
It is.
Is he saying college is useless?
Not exactly. He argues that its primary function is signaling
Real thing, yes. Well,
rather than actual skill development.
what does he mean by that?
So degrees act as signals to employers, you know?
Okay.
They indicate intelligence, conscientiousness, even conformity.
Okay.
But he says that the actual content learned
Yeah.
often has very little practical value in the workplace.
Yeah, that's true. There's definitely some classes I took that.
Right, we all have
Yeah,
those.
exactly.
And so he says that this focus on signaling has inflated the importance of degrees.
Okay.
So it makes it harder for people to get jobs without them, even if they have the skills.
Right, so it's like you need that piece of paper
You need that
to
paper,
prove that you can do the job.
even if you can already do the job.
Right.
So it's this cycle. Employers demand the degrees, people feel pressure to go, and that reinforces the importance of the degrees.
Right, so it's self-perpetuating.
It is. And if the actual learning isn't that valuable, then why are we pouring so much money into it?
Right, exactly.
Right. And he points out that something like $1 trillion of government money
Wow.
goes into supporting the system every year.
$1 trillion. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
But what about, I mean, there's this whole thing about, education is supposed to create this well-informed citizenry,
Right, for functioning democracy.
right?
Well, he actually looked at this too. He presents these surveys that show a pretty dismal picture
Of.
of what the average American knows about history, science, politics,
Oh, really?
even after years of schooling.
Okay, so he's saying even if that's the goal, it's not doing a very good job.
It's not working.
Yeah.
And he points to this irony, right?
Yeah.
In this age of information readily available online, we're still spending crazy money on this formal education
Right.
that might not even be giving us real knowledge.
Yeah. It makes you wonder if there's a better way to do it.
Right. One that focuses on actual skills and knowledge rather than just signaling.
Yeah. Instead of just those credentials.
Yeah. So he's asking, what if we did it differently?
Right.
He suggests vocational training, apprenticeships might be more effective,
Right.
and preparing people for work.
So maybe college isn't the be all end all.
Maybe not. Maybe we need to reevaluate
Yeah.
its role in society.
Okay. So if we're not all supposed to go to college, what does he suggest?
He doesn't have like this one-size-fits-all solution,
Okay.
but he says we need to expose young people to more options,
Okay.
things that don't require that four-year degree.
Right.
So he's talking about expanding horizons, breaking free from that idea that it's the only path to success.
Right, like opening up the possibilities.
Yeah, he really highlights the value of vocational training,
Okay.
which is often overlooked or even kind of dismissed.
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely a stigma against it.
Big time. But he
Yeah.
thinks that's a huge misconception.
Yeah.
Points out vocational training can lead to higher earnings,
Right.
lower unemployment,
Wow.
provides those skills that are actually applicable.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right. So maybe we've been conditioned to think about success too narrowly.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe there are other paths that are just as valid.
Absolutely.
And that brings us to our final deep dive for this part of our exploration, making housing truly affordable.
Okay, yeah. This is something that's super relevant, I think, to thinking and acting locally.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge concern in so many communities,
Yeah.
and it's something that local policies can really impact.
Huge impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what's the perspective here?
Yes.
Tom Woods brings in Ryan McMakin,
Okay.
economist and writer for the Mises Institute.
Okay.
And he argues that the problem isn't a lack of affordable housing,
Yep.
it's government policies
Oh, interesting.
driving up those costs.
So the government's part of the problem, not the solution.
That's what he says. He points to things like zoning laws and housing subsidies
Okay.
as the big culprits.
Okay. I'm intrigued. How do zoning laws make things worse?
Okay. So they often restrict the supply of housing
Okay.
by limiting what types of buildings can be built and where.
Okay.
So they might prohibit multifamily dwellings in certain areas,
Okay.
which reduces the number of units that can be built.
So it's like you're creating scarcity.
Artificial scarcity.
Yeah, which then leads to higher prices.
Exactly. And he says this often benefits existing homeowners
Okay.
at the expense of those looking for affordable places, especially low-income residents.
So it seems kind of counterintuitive that rules meant to manage urban development would end up hurting those who need it most.
Right, like you think it would help.
You would think.
But he's saying these well-intentioned policies often have those unintended consequences
Right.
that make the problem worse.
Right. Okay. What about those subsidies?
Okay, so he says subsidies, like low-interest loans and government-funded housing programs, they distort the market.
Okay.
They inflate demand
okay.
without addressing that limited supply.
Right. So it's like you're putting a Band-Aid on a broken bone.
Exactly.
You're addressing the symptom, but not the cause.
Not the root problem.
Right.
And he compares it to what's happened in higher education.
Okay.
He says government subsidies for student loans have actually driven up tuition costs.
Oh, right.
Making college less affordable.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Yeah. So you have these good intentions, but they backfire.
Yeah. And create these bigger problems.
Exactly. So he argues that's happening in housing, too.
With the subsidies.
Yeah.
Okay.
They create that false sense of affordability.
Okay.
And then developers are encouraged to build those more expensive units.
Oh, okay.
Making it harder to find those truly affordable options.
All right. So if zoning laws and subsidies are part of the problem, what's the solution?
He's all about a market-based approach.
Okay.
Reduce regulations, allow for more housing options.
Okay. So let the market work its magic.
Exactly. Supply and demand.
Yeah.
He thinks by reducing those zoning restrictions, phasing out the subsidies, you create a more efficient and affordable market.
Okay. But some people might argue that the free market can't solve this problem on its own.
Right. They say developers will just build luxury units
right.
for the wealthy.
Yeah, catering to the wealthy.
And he addresses that
okay.
with this really fascinating example, boarding houses.
Boarding houses?
Yeah.
Like something out of a Dickens novel.
I know.
Yeah.
But he points out that those were once a common and viable option.
Oh, wow.
For affordable housing, especially for single people, widows, those with limited incomes.
So it's like a forgotten solution.
It's like a blast from the past.
Yeah.
But he says, you know, cultural shifts, government regulations promoting single family homes.
Right.
Those things led to their decline.
Oh, wow.
Eliminating a source of affordable housing.
Wow. It's amazing how something so commonplace has become like taboo.
Right. You just don't see them anymore.
Yeah.
So he makes this really interesting case for reconsidering them.
For boarding houses.
Yeah.
As a solution.
As a potential solution.
Yeah. To the affordability crisis.
Along with other forms of shared housing.
Okay. But some people might say that they're overcrowded,
yeah.
unsafe.
Yeah.
That we'd be sacrificing quality and safety for affordability.
And he acknowledges those concerns.
Okay.
But he says regulations should focus on safety and sanitation,
okay.
not dictating those specific living arrangements.
Right.
He thinks people should have the freedom to choose what suits their needs and their budget.
Okay, so it's about expanding those options.
Exactly.
And recognizing that one size doesn't fit all when it comes to housing.
One size fits all never works.
It really doesn't.
No. So his argument is thought-provoking.
Yeah.
It makes you think beyond those traditional solutions.
It is.
You know, the zoning and the subsidies.
Yeah.
And consider these alternatives.
Yeah, that maybe would be more effective in the long run.
Yeah, and I think that's what Tom Woods is all about.
This has already been a real eye-opener. It's like looking at these issues through a fresh lens.
Yeah, totally. We've challenged conventional wisdom on all these different topics.
It's interesting.
Yeah, and we're just getting started.
I know.
In the next part of our dive, we'll keep exploring his philosophy.
Okay.
Uncovering more unconventional perspectives, challenging more sacred cows.
Can't wait.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Welcome back to our deep dive into thinking and acting locally.
We've covered a lot of ground already, but we're just getting started.
Yeah, we've only just scratched the surface of Tom Woods's thought-provoking work.
That's right. In this next part, we're going to explore some even more unconventional perspectives.
Ones that might make you question everything you thought you knew about certain issues.
Exactly. Like, really challenge some deeply ingrained assumptions about the role of government, the nature of equality, the best ways to address social problems.
Buckle up, listeners, because things are about to get really interesting.
Okay, so let's pick up where we left off. We were discussing the challenges of making housing truly affordable.
Especially at the local level.
Right, and as we learned from Ryan McMakin, the solution might not be more government intervention.
It might be less.
Yeah, less intervention. He argues that those well-intentioned policies like zoning laws and housing subsidies, they often backfire.
Making housing less affordable and benefiting those who already own homes at the expense of those who are struggling to find a place to live.
Yeah, it's that whole thing about unintended consequences.
Right. Sometimes the best solution is to just get the government out of the way.
And let the market forces of supply and demand do their thing.
Exactly. And McMakin makes a compelling case for reconsidering alternative housing models like those boarding houses.
Yeah, which were once a common and viable option for affordable housing.
It's funny how something that was once so commonplace has become almost taboo.
I know, right? But maybe it's time to revisit those old solutions and see if they can be adapted to meet the needs of modern society.
Absolutely. That's the spirit of thinking and acting locally, to be open to new ideas.
Even those that might seem unconventional or even radical at first glance.
Exactly. Now let's shift gears a bit and dive into a topic that's often presented as a shining example of social progress, the expansion of the welfare state.
Okay. The welfare state is definitely a complex issue with strong opinions on both sides.
It is. And Tom Woods argues that the welfare state, while often presented as a safety net for the most vulnerable, has actually created a culture of dependency and eroded individual responsibility.
So it's like that classic argument that handouts discourage people from working and becoming self-sufficient.
That's part of it. But Woods goes deeper. He explores the historical and philosophical underpinnings of the welfare state and its impact on individual liberty and economic freedom.
I can see how this ties into the Think and Act Locally theme. It's about shifting the focus from reliance on government programs to empowering individuals and communities to take care of themselves.
Exactly. Woods argues that true social progress comes not from government handouts,
but from fostering a culture of self-reliance, entrepreneurship, and individual initiative.
Right. It's about creating a society where people are empowered to solve their own problems and build their own futures rather than relying on the government to do it for them.
Yeah. It's about taking ownership and responsibility for your own life.
Exactly. And Woods doesn't just criticize the welfare state. He also offers alternative solutions.
Okay. Like what kind of solutions?
He talks about the importance of reviving civil society, strengthening families and communities, and promoting private charity
as more effective and sustainable ways to address social problems.
Right. It's about tapping into the power of human compassion and cooperation rather than relying on those big bureaucratic systems.
Yeah, it's about rebuilding those social bonds and creating a society where people feel connected to each other and invested in their communities.
Which is really what thinking and acting locally is all about.
It's about recognizing that real solutions often come from the ground up, not from top-down government programs.
Right now, let's turn our attention to another institution that's often at the center of debate, the American education system.
Okay, we already touched on this a bit with Brian Kaplan and his critique of higher education.
Right, his book, The Case Against Education.
But I'm guessing Tom Woods has even more to say on the subject.
Oh, you bet. He argues that the American education system, particularly public education, has become this massive bureaucratic behemoth
that prioritizes conformity over critical thinking.
Exactly. It's not just about that signaling issue that Kaplan discussed.
Right.
It's also about the stifling of intellectual curiosity and independent thought.
Yeah, that's a pretty damning indictment of the very institution that's supposed to be shaping young minds.
It is. And Woods doesn't hold back. He criticizes the emphasis on standardized testing, the stifling of creativity, and the indoctrination of students with a particular worldview that often goes unquestioned.
Wow, it sounds like he's calling for a complete overhaul of the education system.
In a way, he is. He advocates for greater educational freedom, including school choice homeschooling and alternative learning models that empower parents and students to take control of their education.
So it's about breaking free from that one-size-fits-all model and recognizing that different students have different needs and learning styles.
Exactly. Woods believes that a more decentralized and individualized approach to education would lead to more engaged and well-rounded individuals
who are better prepared to navigate the complexities of the modern world.
Right. It's about fostering critical thinking, creativity, and a thirst for knowledge rather than just rote memorization and obedience to authority.
Yeah, it's about empowering young people to think for themselves and to question the world around them.
And that, I think, is at the heart of what Tom Woods is trying to do with his work. He's trying to encourage people to think critically, to question authority, and to take responsibility for their own lives and communities.
It's a powerful message, and one that resonates deeply with the Think and Act Locally philosophy.
Now let's move on to a topic that's often seen as dry and complex, but that's absolutely crucial to understanding how our world works. Economics.
Economics. I have to admit, it's not always the most exciting topic.
I get it.
But I'm guessing Tom Woods has a way of making it interesting.
He does. He's a master at explaining complex economic concepts in a way that anyone can understand.
And I'm sure he doesn't shy away from challenging conventional wisdom.
Not at all, even when it comes to sacred cows like capitalism.
Yeah. Okay, so what's his take on the current state of the American economy?
Well, Woods is a staunch critic of what he calls crony capitalism.
Crony capitalism.
Yeah, he describes it as a system where big business and government collude to benefit themselves at the expense of ordinary citizens.
So it's like a rigged game where the rules are written to favor the powerful and well-connected.
Exactly. Woods argues that crony capitalism is responsible for many of the economic problems we face today, including inflation, unemployment, and the growing gap between the rich and poor.
Okay, but isn't capitalism supposed to be about free markets and competition? How did it become so distorted?
Woods argues that government intervention, often in the form of subsidies, bailouts, and regulations that favor big business, has created an uneven playing field.
Where small businesses and entrepreneurs struggle to compete.
Exactly. He says it's not capitalism itself that's the problem.
It's the way it's been corrupted by government interference.
Precisely. Woods believes that a truly free market one that's free from government meddling would lead to greater prosperity and opportunity for everyone.
Okay, but how do we get there? How do we break free from the grip of crony capitalism and create a more just and equitable economic system?
Well, Woods proposes a number of solutions, including reducing government spending, eliminating corporate subsidies and bailouts, and returning to a sound monetary system based on gold and silver.
So it's about shrinking the size and scope of government and empowering individuals to make their own economic choices.
Exactly. Woods believes that by reducing government interference and promoting individual liberty, we can unleash the creative potential of the American people.
And create a more prosperous and equitable society.
Precisely.
It's a powerful vision and one that aligns with the Think and Act Locally philosophy.
It is. It's about recognizing that real change often starts at the grassroots level, with individuals taking responsibility for their own economic well-being and challenging those systems that perpetuate inequality.
Yeah. It's about taking action and not waiting for someone else to fix things for us.
Now let's turn our attention to another key aspect of Tom Woods' Think and Act Locally philosophy. The importance of challenging the American establishment and resisting the encroachment of government power.
Okay, this is where things get really interesting. Tom Woods is known for his sharp wit and his willingness to speak truth to power.
He's not afraid to ruffle some feathers.
So what are some of the specific ways he encourages us to challenge the establishment?
Well, he starts by emphasizing the importance of critical thinking and questioning everything we're told, especially by those in positions of authority.
So it's about not blindly accepting the official narrative, but doing our own research and coming to our own conclusions.
Exactly. Woods encourages us to be skeptical of pronouncements from politicians, the media, and even experts in various fields.
It's like that old saying, question everything.
Right. He believes that true knowledge comes from independent inquiry and a willingness to challenge conventional wisdom.
It's about thinking for ourselves rather than letting others think for us.
Precisely. And Woods goes beyond just encouraging critical thinking. He also provides specific tools and strategies for resisting government overreach.
Okay, I'm all ears. What are some of these tools and strategies?
Well, he talks about the importance of supporting organizations that fight for individual liberty and limited government, getting involved in local politics, and educating others about the principles of freedom and self-reliance.
So it's about taking action both individually and collectively to protect our freedoms and hold those in power accountable.
Exactly. Woods believes that the American people have the power to reclaim their liberty, but it requires a conscious effort to resist the constant encroachment of government power.
It's a call to action, a reminder that freedom is not a spectator sport.
We have to actively participate in its preservation.
Exactly. And Woods provides a roadmap for how to do just that.
He does.
It's inspiring to hear someone so passionate about empowering individuals and challenging the status quo.
And that's what makes Tom Woods' work so compelling. He's not just a critic, he's also a builder.
He's offering a vision of a better future.
One that's grounded in the principles of individual liberty, limited government, and free markets.
It's a vision that resonates deeply with the Think and Act Locally philosophy.
It does. It's about recognizing that real change often starts at the grassroots level, with individuals taking responsibility for their own lives and communities.
And that brings us to our final deep dive for this part of our exploration, where we'll delve into one of the most controversial and hotly debated topics of our time.
Foreign policy.
Yes, foreign policy and the role of the United States in the world.
This is something that often feels far removed from our daily lives.
It does, but it obviously has a huge impact on the world and on us as individuals.
It does. And Tom Woods challenges the prevailing interventionist foreign policy that has dominated U.S. foreign policy for decades.
Okay.
He argues that the U.S. has become too entangled in foreign conflicts, often at great cost to both American lives and American treasure.
So he's advocating for a more isolationist approach, one that prioritizes American interests over foreign intervention.
You could say that Woods believes that the U.S. should focus on defending its own borders and promoting peace through diplomacy and trade,
rather than getting involved in costly and often counterproductive military intervention.
Exactly.
But what about the argument that the U.S. has a moral obligation to intervene in situations where human rights are being violated or where there's a threat to global security?
Well, Woods addresses those arguments by questioning the effectiveness of such interventions.
Okay.
He points to examples like the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which he argues have destabilized the region and created more problems than they solved.
It's definitely a complex issue with no easy answers.
Right. And Woods acknowledges that. But he believes that the U.S. should be more cautious and selective in its use of military force.
And that it should prioritize diplomacy and peaceful resolution over military intervention whenever possible.
Exactly.
It's a perspective that challenges the status quo and encourages us to think critically about the role of the U.S. in the world.
It does, and that's what makes this deep dive so valuable. It's not about providing easy answers, but about asking tough questions and exploring alternative perspectives.
This second part of our deep dive has been just as thought-provoking as the first, covering everything from affordable housing and the welfare state to education, economics, and foreign policy.
We've challenged conventional wisdom, explored unconventional solutions, and hopefully inspired you to think more critically about the world around you.
And in our final part, we'll continue to unpack Tom Woods's Think and Act Locally philosophy, exploring even more controversial topics and challenging even more sacred cows.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into thinking and acting locally.
We've really covered a lot of ground.
I know. We've challenged conventional wisdom on Nordic socialism, healthcare,
education, economics,
even foreign policy.
It's been quite a journey. And in this last part, we're going to delve into a topic that's particularly close to Tom Woods's heart.
Okay.
The importance of challenging the American establishment and reclaiming our individual liberty.
This is where things get really interesting. Tom Woods, known for his sharp wit and willingness to speak truth to power.
Oh, absolutely.
What exactly does he mean by challenging the establishment, and how does that tie into thinking and acting locally?
So Woods believes that the American establishment, which he often refers to as the swamp, has become too entrenched in its own power, too disconnected from the needs and interests of, you know, ordinary Americans.
Right.
And he sees it as this combination of big government, big business, and the media.
Oh,
and all working together to maintain that status quo.
To protect their own interests.
Exactly.
So it's like a system that's rigged to benefit those on the inside.
That's his argument.
And leave everyone else out in the cold.
Yeah. And he points to things like those corporate bailouts, regulatory capture,
right,
and the revolving door between government and industry as evidence of this, like, cozy relationship between those in power.
It's a self-perpetuating cycle.
It is.
Those in power use their influence to benefit their allies.
Right.
And then those allies help them maintain their grip on power.
Yeah.
It's a little overwhelming.
It is overwhelming.
To think about challenging a system like that.
Absolutely. And Woods acknowledges that it's a daunting task.
Yeah.
But he also believes it's necessary if we want to preserve our individual liberty and create a more just and equitable society.
Okay.
He argues that, you know, we, the American people, have become too complacent.
Too willing to just go along with things.
Yeah. Just accept the dictates of those in power.
So how do we break free from that? How do we challenge a system that seems so entrenched and powerful?
Well, he offers a range of strategies,
okay,
both individual and collective. And he really emphasizes, again, the importance of critical thinking, questioning everything we're told, especially by those in authority.
Don't just blindly accept the narrative, right?
Right. Do your own research. Come to your own conclusions.
Be skeptical.
He encourages us to be skeptical of politicians, the media, even experts.
Okay.
He believes that true knowledge comes from that independent inquiry and that willingness to challenge that conventional wisdom.
But think for ourselves.
Exactly. Don't let other people think for you.
So that's a powerful message. And one that I think really resonates with this whole thinking and acting locally.
It does.
It's about recognizing that we have power to shape our own narratives.
Yeah.
Create our own realities.
And he goes beyond just the thinking.
Yeah.
He says you have to take action.
Okay.
Both individually and collectively. So He suggests supporting organizations that fight for liberty and limited government.
Okay.
Getting involved in local politics.
Right.
Educating others about the principles of freedom and self-reliance.
So it's about taking action, getting involved in our communities, and working to create change from the ground up.
Exactly. It's recognizing that change starts at the local level.
With individuals taking responsibility.
Yeah, for their lives and their communities. So it's about building relationships, networking, working together to create a better future.
That's a pretty empowering vision.
It is. It reminds us we're not powerless
in
the face of these obstacles.
We can make a difference.
You can shape your own destiny.
Create the kind of world you want to live in.
Exactly. And that's what thinking and acting locally is all about.
This deep dive into Tom Wood's work has been really thought-provoking. We've challenged conventional wisdom, explored solutions.
Hopefully sparked some new ideas.
Yeah, some new perspectives.
It's been a privilege exploring these ideas with you.
And we encourage you to continue exploring.
Yeah, check out those free ebooks.
At tomsfreebooks.com.
Engage with the ideas and see where they take you.
Remember, thinking and acting locally is not just a philosophy.
It's a call to action.
Take responsibility for our lives and our communities.
Work together.
Create a better future.
For ourselves and for generations to come.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Until next time, keep thinking critically, keep challenging the status quo, and keep acting locally.
See you next time.